Now, we've been examining various issues within the immigration debate in the United States. It's a hot-button topic, one that's been invoked for decades on the political stage. The politics of immigration isn't a new issue, but the polarization reached a critical point during the 2016 presidential election when now President Donald Trump ran on a zero-tolerance platform towards undocumented immigrants and on building a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. Our next guest is here to talk about the politics of immigration, the impact politics has on immigration policy, and the people get caught in partisan fighting. Shobha Sivaprasad Wadia is a professor of law at Penn State University and an expert in immigration law. She's also founder and director of the Center for Immigrants' Rights Clinic. Shobha, welcome back to Central Time.
It's good to be back.
Well, why do you think, you've worked on the law side of this a lot, why do you think immigration has risen again and again as such a contentious political issue in the United States?
As you alluded to, immigration has long been controversial. There have been many attempts to pass legislation that would reform our immigration laws. And I think one reason it has derailed is there has been a belief by some politicians that having divisive language or working towards problems as opposed to solutions would lead to success. And I think ultimately we have to talk about solutions. And eventually the politicians who do talk about solutions to our immigration system will be the ones who are rewarded.
When did you see immigration in its most recent kind of polarized manner rise as such a polarizing issue in the United States? It's, as you say, it's been up and down. When did you see in the more recent years this coming back as a hot issue?
Sure. So I've been in the immigration space for about 20 years and have seen the controversy through many different lenses as a practicing attorney before the old agency, Immigration and Naturalization Service, as a policy advocate during three cycles of comprehensive immigration reform during the George W. Bush administration, and now as a law teacher and researcher during the Obama and now Trump administrations. And I think one genesis for the controversy is that immigration law is complicated. The statute was passed by Congress in 1952. It has been compared second in complication to the U.S. tax code. And so in some ways, using sound bites becomes easier than talking about actual solutions. But we know what the solutions are. There have been bipartisan immigration solutions on the table in years past. And the question now is, do we have enough politicians who are willing to attach their names to those solutions and push it to the finish line?
Yeah, what is it that is standing in the way of that and has been standing in the way of that?
Well, as I alluded earlier, some might be connected to the idea that it's hopeless, right? That there are no solutions. And I think some of the rhetoric we hear adds to that feeling of hopelessness. The narrative that has been used in this administration towards immigrants and the divisive language that has been used between who is American and other has been so striking. And so I think those are some of the causes for why immigration has been divided and why a solution has been looked like it's further away than it actually is.
Shobha Sivaprasad Wadia is with us from Penn State University looking at politics and immigration here in the United States. You mentioned the Trump campaign and presidency. Let's give a listen to then-candidate Donald Trump when he announced his candidacy back in 2015. A lot of talk about immigration. Here's some of that.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. But I speak to border guards, and they tell us what we're getting.
And some people at that moment even thought that rhetoric was going to hurt his candidacy. He is the president now. There's enough political support for that attitude toward immigration to win a Republican primary and not prevent a win in the general election.
So it's a great example of how divisive language is at the opposite end of the spectrum to finding solutions. I think ultimately we have to talk about what is good for America and also use unifying language. Leaving aside the misrepresentations that have pervaded both during the Trump presidency and before he took office, for years we had politicians who cared about solutions asking, for example, for a path to citizenship for people who are living in the United States without papers. We have upwards of 11 million people in the U.S. living without papers. More than half of that population has lived in the U.S. for over a decade. Many have U.S. citizen children. I think that family reunification and a pathway to citizenship is something that Americans generally support, and we see that in poll after poll. Similarly, if we look at people who might be coming in the future to fill jobs that are in demand, a legislative solution would cover that. And then finally, making sure that there is fair enforcement, right? The best way to improve national security might be to find out who people in the United States without papers actually are and to allow them to step forward and apply or register for what is eventually a legalization policy.
Yeah, make the connection. How would that boost national security?
So if we were to look at the population today of 11 plus million people living without papers, I would say in this environment, the rhetoric is only causing a greater chilling effect for people to cooperate and step forward. Contrast that to a legislative solution that has incentives, maybe a fine or a fee, where an individual or family shared their name and information, were told that their information would not be used for enforcement purposes, were found to have a job or a family relationship, and then be able to get on a line. People often ask, why don't they just get online? But the reality is the current framework for our immigration law provides no line for the vast majority of people who are living in the U.S. without papers and contributing in meaningful ways.
You mentioned public opinion. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You weren't done.
I wanted to not lose sight of changes and reforms that we should also be making to legal immigration. So, for example, in 1990, Congress created statutory ceilings and quotas for how many visas would be allocated for certain family relationships, such as spouses, children, parents of U.S. citizens or spouses and children of green card holders. It drew similar lines for certain employer-employee relationships, such as a foreign national with extraordinary ability in the sciences working at NIH, sponsored by the institution to work and eventually get a green card. Well, these ceilings haven't changed in over two decades. And so that is what has caused backlogs for people who are in legally qualifying relationships. And what that means for the children of those who are waiting is that often they will not have an opportunity to eventually obtain a green card, though they are, again, in a legally qualifying relationship. So imagine if you were looking at a quota or, you know, any type of allotment. Maybe it's a club you belong to or a university that you gained admission to 20, 30 years ago. If those allotments never changed over three decades and were basically unresponsive to the marketplace, to demands, to needs, where would that leave us? Unfortunately, that's where our immigration statute is today. And we have a solution, and that solution is to increase those caps and have a more flexible cap for those seeking admission in the future.
Shobha Sivaprasad-Wadi is with us right now looking at the politics of immigration. She's a professor of law at Penn State University and an expert in immigration law, also the founder and director of the Center for Immigrants' Rights Clinic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you base your vote in part on immigration issues? And what do you want Congress and your congressional and Senate representatives to do? How do you want them to vote on immigration issues? What questions do you have about the role politics plays in the immigration debate and immigration enforcement? What would you like to see change, if anything, in the system? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. We continue our conversation now about the role politics plays, and how we talk about immigration and how immigration laws are written and enforced. Shobha Sivaprasad-Wadi is with us, professor of law at Penn State University, expert in immigration law, and founder and director of the Center for Immigrants' Rights Clinic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is immigration a motivating issue for you in politics, in writing to your representatives, in voting for congressional and Senate representatives, for example? Do you think that Congress should come together and do some kind of serious, comprehensive immigration reform? What would you want that to look like? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls now. John is with us in La Crosse. John, hi.
Hello there.
What do you think?
I think we keep posing the question wrong, and I think we keep referring to immigration incorrectly, because the general question is, are you opposed to immigration? And if you asked me, I would be against illegal immigration, but I am definitely for immigration. So there's two separate ideals here that are getting thrown into one, and I think that's what's causing a lot of turmoil in generalized conversation, making it almost politicized that you can only answer that you're against immigration, and it might be legal immigration. So if that makes any sense.
Gotcha, John. And I'll muddy the waters a little more, Shobha, adding in categories like asylum seekers and refugees. A lot of times when we're talking about people coming into the United States, there are a lot of categories here. Oh, and it looks like we've lost our guest, Shobha Sivaprasad-Wadi, and hopefully we're trying to get her back. We are talking about the politics of immigration and looking for your input, too, at 800-642-1234. This is part of a week-long series, by the way, our fifth part of that. If you've missed any of it, you can always go back to our archives at WPR.org. That's WPR.org. Look for our immigration series there. We've covered a lot of immigration 101 type topics, a lot of the basics of how immigration law works that might be lost in a lot of the political conversations. Shobha, I think we have you back.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay. Well, these mysterious things happen sometimes. Our caller had said it's tough to talk about immigration sometimes because, if someone's asked if they're opposed to immigration, well, they might be opposed to illegal immigration, he says, but all for legal immigration. And I threw in categories like asylum seekers and refugees. We're talking about a lot of different people in different situations.
That's a fair point. And I think when we talk about what the solution is, in the realm of reform, it can be all of the above. You know, getting to the earlier comment I made about lines, right? As a law professor, I believe strongly in the rule of law and what the statute said and what parameters Congress has drawn. But if those parameters have not been revised or made room for all of the changes that we've seen in our society and all of the ways in which immigrants have otherwise integrated, that's when we get to the conversation or question about where the solution lies. I strongly believe that many, if not the majority of people living in the U.S. without papers would rather be on a legal line and on a pathway to citizenship. interestingly, with asylum seekers, and they're not the only population, it's a good example to show that somebody without papers may anyway be eligible for relief or a benefit under our laws. And that might be a good way to talk about how status itself is constantly changing. So to the extent we try and draw lines between, for example, somebody who entered without inspection and somebody who holds a green card, the reality is that could be the very same person over time. It's possible that somebody could cross the border but eventually qualify for a waiver, fall in love, and acquire a green card.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go next to Bill in Manitowoc. Bill, hi.
Yeah, hi. You know, I kind of support a middle ground on this. I'd like to, you know, Trump was elected, and everybody knew what he stood for when he ran for president. So I do want to do something for the Dreamer kids. I think that they weren't to blame for being brought into this country. But at the same time, we absolutely have to secure that southern border, or we're going to have the same problem in 20 years. Reagan gave amnesty, and, you know, 20 years later, we're talking about the same problem. I just, you know, there's billions, and that's with a B, people living in poverty in the world. And if we let, they would all love to come here, and we would look like India or Bangladesh if we let all the refugees come in. So there's got to be a middle ground here.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Shoba, what do you think?
A fair point. A few points to make as a follow-up. You know, interestingly, the number of people who are arriving at our border and the number of apprehensions have been generally down in the last few years. We have seen a lot of money over the last several decades devoted to the border, and yet that hasn't impacted the flow if we look over 40 years. And so that really begs the question of what reform can or should look like. I would also point out that in a universe of limited resources, the government has roughly the funds to deport about 400,000 or less than 4% of the 11 plus million people living in the U.S. without papers. So Congress aside, the executive has choices to make about who to target for enforcement and who to place on the back burner. It sounds like the caller might place those who have DACA on the back burner. They seem to be people who are in the U.S., contributing to our educational and economic space, and have lived in the U.S. for over a decade. And so I would agree with the caller that we do have to set priorities. Unfortunately, we are in a landscape in this administration where many people are considered to be enforcement priorities, including those who have the types of qualities and roles that are very consistent with American values.
Thanks for that call. I'll go next to Mark with us in Juneau County. Mark, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you think?
You posed this question as being in favor of comprehensive immigration control. That I oppose, because you don't know what's – you've got too many moving parts. You can't look to see what the result is of any part. Pass whatever you want to pass on a smaller basis, see what happens, make your adjustments, pass something else. If we did science the way they try to do comprehensive anythings, it would be a complete failure. It's you have to be able to measure what the effect is, and you cannot measure effect on something as big as comprehensive.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. And Mark, summing up a debate that's happened on and off in Congress, I think, Shoba, the question of do we try to do everything at once when it comes to immigration and border security, or a bit here, a bit there?
It's a really fair question where reasonable minds have different points of view. My own view is that we have to reach a point where we have a unified idea of what comprehensive is, even within the immigration advocate community. There have been lines drawn in different places. But I think that once that answer is made, and I think we have been there historically, that we should have a comprehensive immigration reform bill. And I think oversight and accountability will be incredibly important, as will the implementation of any comprehensive solution. Even after a bill or piece of legislation is passed by Congress, the implementation itself is carried out largely by federal agencies, and the care taken around that implementation will really matter.
We'll leave it there for now, Shoba. Thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Shoba Sivaprasad Wadia is a professor of law at Penn State University and an expert in immigration law. She's also the founder and director of the Center for Immigrants' Rights Clinic. She joins us today to talk about how the issue of immigration has become such a polarizing political topic today and offer some solutions to get out of the gridlock surrounding the issue. This was part of our week-long series examining immigration through law and history. You can check out this conversation and others in that series at WPR.org. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, we'll look at the dangers facing workers in the poultry industry. And soap operas were one of the earliest forms of television programming. We'll find out how they've evolved and the influence they've had on American culture. Plus, we'll look at the latest indictments in the Mueller probe that came down earlier today, all against the backdrop of the Trump-Putin meeting scheduled for Monday. That and more, all coming up Monday here on Central Time.